Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of the Commercial Real Estate 101 Meetup Group. Today, we're actually excited to host Krista Yockey. She is a commercial real estate agent with Core Real Estate Partners here in Louisville, Kentucky. She was actually a guest of ours over almost a year and a half ago now, which is crazy to think, on the meetup. And she talked at that point about her transition from residential real estate to commercial real estate and some of the hurdles that she had to overcome to do that. And now that she's a few more years into her career, I thought it'd be awesome to be able to have her back so that she can provide additional context to the early years in commercial real estate. She's almost 3 years in now, if I'm not mistaken. And so she's really been able to establish herself in a relatively short period of time. And so today's episode, we're going to talk about, you know, again, some of that transition away from what she was doing before into commercial real estate. And then as she's continued to grow in her career, some of the hurdles she's had to overcome, some of the strategies that she's employed to continue to establish herself. And then we also touched on a little bit on the mental health piece when it comes to commercial real estate, because it is, you know, a fully commissioned business. So the first few minutes of the initial meeting, actually, we were having some technical issues, and ultimately, we lost the introduction of how she got into the business. So I thought I'd just provide quick context before we dive into the full recording, so you all can actually have some context of where she came from. So she actually graduated with a degree in professional sales, back in, I believe, is 2015, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sure she can correct me on that. But after that, she got into the started working at waste management in outside sales. So she would go to these different industrial facilities and sell services for waste management. Then she decided to get into the residential space after one of her mentors ended up selling a ridiculous amount of homes her first year. And she was a professional sale, like one of the best salesmen that she's ever seen. And so she wanted to kind of follow suit and follow similar paths. She did that, had a lot of success her first year. I think she sold over 25 homes. I think it was 27 to be exact, but you know, again, we can get correct numbers from Krista on that regard. And then ultimately got into the leadership side of residential real estate with a local Keller Williams firm that's one of the biggest in the city. Decided during COVID that it really wasn't something she was interested in doing as far as on the residential front. And she just jumped straight into commercial, kind of just really wanting to get into it. And she did it. And she started during COVID. So we talk a little bit about some of the hurdles that she had overcome through that. But I'm really excited to hear what you guys have to what you have to think about this particular discussion, because I know I gained a lot of value from it. So without further ado, let's go ahead and dive right in.
I had always wanted to go into commercial, knowing that our paychecks are few and far between. And so I had a talk with my husband, and he was like, I got you, just go take the leap. And that is how I got into commercial. And I, from day one, said that I wanted to do industrial, and I did not waver on that. That is still my specialty. And there's some brokerages in town that do industrial at a very high level. And a lot of them do it like dibble dabble here and there, and didn't have the resources to teach me how to do it very well. And so I joined a boutique firm that specialized in industrial and vacant land rezoning, got to learn a lot about what that looks like and help the development side. And I switched to a brokerage that works specifically with developers and investors at a high caliber level. So I've gotten to help more the family side of things. And now I'm helping, you know, the higher caliber, we know what we're doing, we know what we're doing, we need you to go out and find it type of clients now as well. So still always, as Raphael has said, a learning process. And every day, you know, you have clients that think they know what they want, and you have to have hard conversations.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, I can attest to that. I mean, obviously, I've known Krista since she's gotten into the brokerage business, and you were committed to industrial from day one. And I think part of the reason for that is because you had the experience on the waste, you worked at waste management for a while. So
I did,
you know, yeah. Kind of had a similar, not necessarily, I know that you utilize your skills in as a salesperson to go on site and build relationships with these individuals who operated these types of facilities. So it was something that, you know, I know you were committed to from the get go. One thing I'm kind of curious about is, you know, regarding the transition period. So you transitioned away from more of a management role in residential real estate to then now jumping into the brokerage space. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember that you did it during COVID, correct?
Yes, I did.
So it was probably one of the worst times to do that, if I had to guess. I remember I had just started getting going in my brokerage career. I think it was like 6 or 7 months in when COVID hit, and literally nothing. It just went from zero to, barely anything to zero. So can you kind of talk to me a little bit about how it was navigating those first early months and really the first year when we still had the after effects of COVID? If you could provide that context, I think that'd be great.
Yeah, of course. Probably the biggest thing that I would guide people on is you got to give yourself some grace. Even though I had been in real estate for several years, and I still tell people this multiple times a week, commercial and residential are complete opposites. You've got to take yourself out of the situation and learn, and then you can jump back into the market to really educate your clients on and know what you're doing, because there's a lot more money on the line. This is their livelihood. And also talking them through finances, you've got to have a lot of confidence, to look at a business owner in town and say, yeah, cool. You have the money to buy the building, but do you have the money to buy your inventory? Do you have the money to get by if your staff quits, And so you've got to have those conversations, and that's not anywhere in residential. And so I would say find a buddy, if you are a residential agent that is willing to guide you, offer to do deals together. And when I say together, I mean have them do it and you get the permission to shadow and follow. Because Rafael and I both get calls from residential agents that want to work deals together. And guys, I can say it because I was there. You don't know, so you've got to take the time to learn and teach yourself before you can just jump in. And of course, there's always, one-offs there. I tell agents, if you want to buy a sixplex, of course you can do that. I can walk you through it a little easier. If you're buying a warehouse, you need to refer that to someone because the environmental liability that you have no idea goes on, you've got to take that off of yourself. So to jump back to your question, Rafael, I would say in the midst of COVID, something that totally changed the industry from where I was trained is I was trained in door knocking. And so I started doing that when I got into commercial again, to go to businesses door to door. And would you believe 80% of their doors were locked and the 20% that were unlocked did not have a receptionist for me to talk to. And so I went just about nowhere on door knocking. And then I thought, okay, I'll mail out letters and, they would somewhat come back. Did they ever get open? I really don't know, And so I only got one or two calls back from that. And I would say, when you're getting into the business, you've got to figure out what strategy works for your personality and don't just mirror what other people do. Because Rafael and I do totally different things to build our book of business. And it works for each of us based on our past and our personalities. And so you've got to be willing to change your strategy every 2 weeks. Just try it, because the worst that's going to happen is you fail, but you learned something that doesn't work for you, and so you've always got to be willing to change and adjust to the market and conversations and that type of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And like you said, as the market adjusts, because we're in a period of adjustment right now, and I'm sure in your end, if you're dealing with a lot of investors, there's a stagnation right now because buyers are like, I can only pay this. And sellers are like, we want to, sell for top dollar still, like it was 2021 or 22, which is not the case anymore. So, we're kind of in a limbo state. And I've seen, funding for commercial loans has dropped significantly over the last, 6 to 12 months. And I'm assuming it's probably going to remain that way until there's a reset as far as expectations are concerned. So, I really appreciate your sharing regarding the market dynamics, because it does shift over time and you have to be willing to adapt. So, maybe kind of touching back to that first year in the business, one thing I'm kind of curious about is, you mentioned some of the strategies that you tried to employ to kind of get your wheels turning. And for those of you guys who are primarily in the residential space, you understand that, when you get into the commercial space, I know you had the conversation with, people, but it's like, oh, it may take you 6 months or 12 months to get your first deal. That's not necessarily an unrealistic timeline. So, can you talk about, that mindset you had when you first started, and then as you got further into the business, how you reset things to try to then, continue to build on top of the momentum.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I will say, this is still an internal battle for me. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like it's not like you're a perfectionist and you're like, I got this, and you just keep going. Cause there's going to be months. And I was just telling Raphael before we got on the call, you know, like I closed 5 deals in January and I didn't close a deal for 4 months. And that sucks, you know, cause you're just like, I'm working so hard and sowing all of these seeds. And the mindset is that you have to know, as long as you're taking care of people and you're doing the right things, that it's going to come back to you. And I know that's a cliche, but really that's kind of all you have in commercial to keep you going, because you've got to build these relationships for so long term, and you can't waver on that because you'll lose deals. You know, Raphael and I met clients years ago that we still poke maybe once or twice a year or a quarter, and eventually they come back and do have a question, you know, but it takes years. And so you've got to remember that and have the long game in mind, because everybody thinks that we're rolling in money, you know. And there are agents, there's an agent in our market that sold $450 million last year. He is rolling in money. So it is definitely feasible and you can get there. But if commercial has taught me anything, you know, I talked to you guys through my history. I had 5 jobs in 6 years. And this is the first job I've had. And it's a career, truly, because I love it, you know, and I'm invested in it and I'm here for it. But this is the first job where I was like, I have got to buckle down and sign up for the long term and know that it'll come back to me as long as I build a reputation and those relationships while really educating yourself every single day. Raphael and I both look at the economics forecast and articles within our community and within our country, and also how Russia's war on Ukraine has impacted the whole world, you know. And so you've got to study all those things and understand the ripple effects of others' businesses and personal lives' actions and how that can ripple into your economy personally.
Yeah, 100%. And you better advise your clients that way, right? Because, you know, just because a client says they want something, they may not understand the implications of what that decision is. And so as you really have to think like a business person. That's one of the big distinctions that I've found within the residential versus commercial space is you have to think like a business owner. If you're dealing in the, you know, the owner user space, and even on the investment front, because you have to understand, you know, what tenants are looking for, why they're looking for it, you know, what's going to make something attractive for a particular tenant. You know, is a building, if you buy a building that's functionally obsolete, meaning that maybe in the industrial space, the ceiling heights are 10 feet tall, and you're trying to target a logistics company, you're not going to find one that's going to really take advantage of that space to its fullest potential. And so, you know, you have to start understanding this type of stuff, and it takes time, like you had mentioned. So,
well, and you know, like you said, we're business owners too. We're self-employed contractors. Mm-hmm. And so understanding that gives you, kind of on the flip side, the boundaries to look at your clients and be like, you know what? I'm not going to answer your call after 7. You know, let's not even waste our time going to look at this, because it is exactly what you told me you didn't want, you know, because you've got to protect yourself too. Because a lot of people are going to want to pick your brain for free. And none of us make money for free. Okay. So you've got to be able to know, this is who I am. This is the clientele I'm going after. And here's my confidence and all the studying I've done to look at my clients and truly be a consultant to them and not just someone that they want to drive around town and unlock doors, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And you'll learn. I mean, that's the thing too, is we talked about it a lot when, you know, we were first, you know, in the same brokerage, is that, you know, you start dealing a lot of, in particular with startups. Sometimes startups can be a time drain. For a variety of reasons. There's some that are on point, they're ready to go, they have their business plan, their financials are all ready to go, and they really know what they want. And those are the ones you need to dedicate the most time to actually getting done, because you're going to have a higher probability of success. But, you know, I can attest to myself, and I'm sure Krista can as well, that you deal sometimes with startups that like the idea of something, but in reality, they have nothing in place to get it executed. Because at the end of the day, you have to realize that landlords are taking a risk on startups. Most startups fail. So if I'm a building owner and you approach me with a startup idea, even if it's a, you know, somewhat of a established idea, it's still a risk that they're taking. And so you have to be able to arm your agent with the ammo that they need to convince an entity that you're worth taking that chance on. And so, you know, that's those types of conversations I know I had with clients, and now I feel like I'm very well versed in it. But when I first started, I spun my wheels for months with people. Yeah. And then one I wasted almost a year and a half with, and we weren't able to get anything done. I know. And obviously I felt responsible because I felt like, man, I really should have been able to get this done. But in reality, when I look back now, it's like, I could have really saved myself the heartache and time had I really just sat down and tried to prep them properly. So.
Well, and I've had clients emotionally spin my wheels, you know, because one of the hardest things coming from residential into commercial is that a client's ability to find the money is the last thing needed before closing. Whereas in residential, you're pre-approved by a bank before I'm going to leave my door to show you anything. And so you have to trust. And it's so hard. Your trust meter, because you really believe in people's dreams. And if they keep saying they have the money, it's not a problem, I'll find it, I have investors, you know, you still got to do your job. And I guess what we both are trying to say to all of you is it's going to happen to you. And just know that you're not alone, and just know that you've got to take the lessons that you've learned from it and up your radar. So when it comes back around, you have the harder questions to ask, but you've been burned so bad, you have no problem asking those questions anymore, because either you can or cannot make it happen. And it is or is not your money, you know? And so once you've gotten burned, it's a lot easier, but you're going to have the journey to get there, just like each of us did.
Absolutely. So one thing I'm curious about, and this is an art that you evolve over time, is setting expectations. So could you kind of talk about how you set expectations for your clients? And this happens on the leasing side, the buy side, and the sales side. You know, Chris and I were talking offline that recently I've listed a few properties that I think are a little highly priced, but you kind of had to set that expectation early on, saying, hey, just so you are aware, because we're taking this approach, we may have lower activity on this front. And as long as they're okay with that, then you can decide whether or not you want to pursue that as an opportunity. But at the end of the day, learning to set expectations is critical in making sure that you actually execute transactions. Because if you're not able to do that, I'm sure, you know, Krista, you can attest to that. How have you, I guess, navigated that process over the last few years?
Yeah, I would say that the key is consistency. Your client can't argue with you if you are going out of your way to underpromise and overperform, right? And so if I'm sharing with you that I have showings and I'm keeping you up to date before the showing and after showing, and I give you a once a month or once a week, depending on the client, you know, update on marketing tactics that I've put in, you know, then the client understands the agent is not the problem. Maybe the client doesn't like the market and they can view the market as the problem. But at the end of the day, either you're going to sell it or you're not, you know? And so we're here to walk through the process of how to make it as easy as possible. But that is always a conversation you want to have before you even talk about setting a listing appointment, you know, of like, let's talk about what market rates are in the area to give you an idea. Because people have really inflated, as Raphael has said, you know, ideas of what things are worth. And it gets really hard to backtrack. And I mean, just personally, I had a retail strip that I had listed for sale and they had me pull comps 6 months ago. Okay, well, now we're ready to list it. Okay, well, I mean, the comps are still the comps, you know, commercial comps take longer to gather and compare, and there really wasn't any change to the market. So we listed at a very high price and they would not back down. And then the market kept declining on them. And so they just didn't want to hear the fact that it would be worth less. And I'm like, we listed it high to have a little wiggle room. And now you're being stubborn and denying that wiggle room even existed. And now you won't decrease the price at all, you know? And so it's like, you have to come to terms too with the fact that if someone is being so unrealistic, that's not your problem. You're not here to change their mind. And it's truly not worth your time. And so I took that $1.5 million listing, which when you're a newer agent was really hard. That was really hard. But I, you know, the clients were driving me insane. They wouldn't give me one point of contact. They wanted to talk individually, you know, at 11 a.m., a call at 3 and a call at 7, you know, every single day. And I finally, you know, my husband even looked at me and was like, is this really worth it? Is this worth it that bad? You know? And I was like, in the beginning, I was like, yeah, you know, what if I get paid on both sides? Not that I'm greedy, but you know, Kentucky is a state where you can, dual agency is very common. And so it was, I took that and then I was like, okay, what if I just represent the seller? You know, they're being unrealistic. If a different agent brings a buyer, then we have to negotiate, right? And then just more time went by, you know, and we couldn't lower the price. And finally, they just kept blaming me. And I was like, I'm done, you know, like, good luck to you. And they kept threatening me, you know, that they were going to let me go. And I finally was like, I'm going to do myself a favor and you, I guess, and let myself go. And they brought on a residential agent that sells luxury homes to list their retail shopping strip, you know? And it was like, I don't know. I wish you luck. I hope it sells quickly, but you just have to come to terms with, it's not my problem anymore. I did the best I could. And I set my boundaries and my standards, and I'm not going to waver on that. And you just have to go forward.
100%. Yeah. And that also comes into play, which I think is going to be an important topic in here, is the mental health piece when it comes to brokerage sometimes. Because I had a similar, not necessarily somewhat of a similar experience previously. I had a gentleman who I had sold a fiveplex for who was legit bipolar. Like he would flip on a dime and just like curse you out and hang up the phone. And then you try to call him back and then he would scream at you again, hang up the phone. And I was just like, okay, like, and I just gave it up because he, you know, he had some losses in his family relatively recently. So I said, okay, maybe he's just going through some difficult times or whatever else. But so I helped him sell that one property. That one went okay, smooth. It was pretty, you know, difficult just because he was very, very difficult to deal with. And then the second property that I had listed with him, he was being very unrealistic about what needed to be done. We had it under contract. It fell through. He lost it, flipped out on me, was yelling at me, cursing at me, telling me that I was an idiot, all this other stuff. And I said, well, I think it's best that we just part ways at this point, because I'm not trying to have to deal with this nonsense, right? And I don't think anyone should have to deal with any type of abuse like that. So I talked to my broker. We sent a termination agreement to him, and we got it done. We just close it.
Well, and I will tell, go ahead. I'll tell anybody that if someone is treating you like you work for them instead of with them, then move on. And it's going to be hard, but you deserve the respect when you carry yourself at such a high standard to be treated as a professional, just like you treat them. You know, because I'm not going to take abuse from anybody, especially being a woman working with a lot of older men. You know, I'm just like, okay, buddy, go hire who you want, you know, because there's a lot of younger entrepreneurs that would love my help because I study something that they didn't and they would like me to discuss with them versus talking down at me. Like I work way too hard to be talked down at and I ain't got no time for that. And so I just move on because it's not worth, I'm already so hard on myself and nobody's going to hold me more accountable than me. You 70-year-old man are not going to make me work harder. Okay. You know, and so that's the lesson I always tell myself is like, as long as I'm carrying myself at such a high standard, and it's hard, the mental health is hard. You know, Raphael's a really great friend of mine and I've kept him in the loop with my dad almost died 2 months ago and just this inner turmoil. And it wasn't like a scare and then back to normal life. Like it changed my dad's whole life. We've got, you know, he's not allowed to work anymore. All these things that are now on my shoulders. And it's like, what if my dad does die? And that guilt of, do I spend more time with my dad, you know, while I have it? Or do I work because I tell myself I need to work, you know? And so that's a constant battle of, again, I'm self-employed. I have the choice. But it doesn't make it easier, you know, when you make that decision for yourself. And so just knowing that you're doing the best you can and giving yourself grace. And Rafa and I both struggle with telling ourselves like, we're doing pretty well, you know, compared to agents that just get into the market willy-nilly. Like we're so driven and every day we get up and get dressed and go out and make it happen. Especially, you know, I am a physical hunter, not for deer, but for business. And so it's just this unending, okay, well, it's five, you know, I've worked all day. I went to a BNI at 7 a.m, you know, I'm tired, but it's like, what if I go, you know, to one more event or have one more coffee? And so you've got to be able to to read your body and know, like, no, you're exhausted today. Like, you can stop today, you know?
Yeah. And I think part of it is obviously the type A personality. Like, you have a very, like you said, a hunter mentality. And I think the brokerage business attracts people like that, right? Because they want to kind of have control of their own destiny. And part of having that A-type personality is you hold yourself to an extremely high standard and you deal with imposter syndrome on a regular basis. And I deal with it all the time. I mean, you know, you're always talking about stuff like, you know, you feel like you have a lot of stuff going on, but it's not manifesting itself in paychecks as of yet, right? So you could, you know, I'm sure with those five transactions you closed in January, you'd been working those transactions forever. I've got a deal right now that I'm a year and a half in, and we still don't know if it's going to close, but it's getting closer, which is nice. And it's going to be a pretty big deal, but it's like we're a year and a half in at this point. So, you know, you got to have that understanding. And I think having that long range approach and understanding and not giving yourself, like, you know, obviously giving yourself grace, but understand that you plant the seeds. You still have to plant the seeds. You still have to get after.
You can't ever stop. Like, you've got to continue the hustle, because if you stop, you're going to feel it 7 months from now.
Yeah. Not today. Yeah. It can feel that. And that's a great point. And this is something that I've learned myself, because I didn't come from a sales background. And so, you know, you get busy working on active deals and then you forget, oh, I still have to get out there and find new opportunities. Because, you know, if you're working on five deals or 10 deals, let's say, you know, 50% of those are going to wash out. I mean, it's just simple math. And in this environment, maybe seven of those are going to wash out. Maybe eight. So it's one of those things where you constantly have to get out there, but understand that regardless of where you're at and how you feel, you know, as long as you continue to hustle, you'll outlast people eventually. Like that's the lesson I've seemed to have learned. And I'm sure you've learned it as well, is that the people who last in this business tend to do pretty well.
Yes, for sure. So. In residential, they always say, if you can make it 2 years, you can make it. And in commercial, I would say, if you can make it 5 years, you can make it, you know, to fulfill society's standard on what making it is for these careers. But yes, you got to grind for a while. And luckily, every commercial agent will tell you the same. So, you know, you just got to make it happen.
Definitely. So a few more questions, then we'll open up to Q&A. One being, you know, what are some of the things you wish you would have known prior to jumping in to kind of prep yourself for the road ahead? I think that would be helpful, because there's probably several people on the call and people who are listening live on LinkedIn that are residential agents wanting to get into the commercial space.
Yeah, definitely. Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. I would say probably one of the hardest lessons that I learned that I wish I had just accepted earlier on was, you're not going to make everybody happy, but everybody knows that part. But even when you have all the answers, people still might not want to work with you, and you're never going to get that reason why, and it's not going to make sense, you know? And so you're not going to have closure on conversations with certain clients. There's going to be clients that you have a great heart to heart with and you're really excited, and they ghost you. Rafael and I have both had deals where we literally negotiated LOIs back and forth, and we worked months, and our own client ghosted everyone in the group. And I went to the listing agent and I was like, I'm sorry, like, you can try calling them, you know? And that's such a desperate, horrible feeling. But it has nothing to do with you. And so my husband also reminds me probably weekly, control the controllables, you know, and just stay in your lane. And another thing is that anybody can do commercial. You know, I never want someone to reach out to me and they're like, you know, can I do it? Should I do it? The answer is yes, you can do it, but you've got to know your stuff. It's not just going to be handed to you, and you can't just fake it till you make it in this industry, or else you're not going to make it, because people can see through that. And so I would say, you know, really hone in on what you want to specialize in, whether you have those contacts or not. You've got to figure out a way. If you want to do, you know, high-end office listing, well, maybe not right now. If you want to do like large multifamily listings, you know, then you'll start going to investor meetups, and you'll go to different meetings where you have people that are high end in the residential world that know multifamily owners. You know, if you want to do warehouse like I do, you know, I go to restaurant associations and distributor meetings and rubber town, you know, manufacturing chemical meetings. And so you're going to have to do things that you might not get an invite to, directly, but you've got to know the people and make friends with them that would be willing to take you with them. And that is a lot of the journey, is so much of knowing people who know people. And that's why I'm always willing to answer people's questions, whether it's an agent wanting to get into commercial, whether it's a business owner. You know, I've had a handful of business owners, because in between my warehouse and vacant land, I do a lot of office. I didn't try to, it just happens because the referrals I get. But I've had business owners and directors of nonprofits, you know, request a meeting with me, and they're like, I think I'm overpaying for my lease. Can you talk me through it? And it's awful. And I'm like, you really got raked over the coals on this lease, and you unfortunately still have 2 years left, you know, and you can try and fight that battle. But here's attorneys, you know, but I'm just the resource. And one day when that 2 years comes, I hope that they would be willing to call me back because I helped them, you know. So you've got to just look out for others and not be selfish.
Yeah. And plant the seeds, like you said, and understand that, you know, in residential, anyone can be your client. I mean, I could walk in the grocery store and most people are going to need to or want to buy a house at some point in their lifetime. Whereas in our industries, you know, you do a lot in the industrial side. I do a lot in the retail side, like restaurants, franchises, that sort of thing. There's only a select few people that actually operate in that space. So you have to put yourselves in positions to interact with those individuals. And so, you know, I appreciate your sharing that front regarding the lead time as it comes to, you know, the transactions that you eventually do. Do you have any advice regarding, you know, reserves you should have, or, you know, anything like that?
I would say you definitely want 6 months of savings. Expect to not make a dime for 6 months. And, you know, if you do, then great. But that's the preparation. If anything, maybe 9 months just to be safe, depending on what type of sector of the industry you want to get into. And just know that your deals are probably going to be really tiny in the beginning, especially if you're at a brokerage that might hand you leads and they take a bigger cut because they own that lead. So they might be really tiny in the beginning, but you just got to know that you're building your brand and your book of business. And, you know, I laugh at myself because every career I have tried to pursue has gotten longer and longer in the sales cycle. So you can imagine when I went into commercial and most deals take 6 to 12 months, it's just like pulling teeth out. Cause I'm like, I was trained in cold call closing, meaning I walked into a business and I had them sign a contract that day, not like in a pushy way, in a helpful, I got you way, you know, but it was still to go from, we're doing this right now in 30 minutes. And that was how I was trained in sales to then now, you know, love on people. And once a quarter, let's get a coffee and I'll bring you a Christmas present so that I have an excuse to get in front of you. You know, it's just, it's a lot more intentional, and you have to go out of your way to be memorable and intentional, or else people truly just will forget about you because you don't have any other reason to really be talking to them. You know, most people think, oh, I'll call you when I need an office, you know, but I just did this, you know, with some attorneys in town. And unfortunately, they called me 1 month before they both left their jobs and wanted to start their own company together. And I'm like, okay, well, I will do my best, you know, and then everybody's stressed out because that should have been a six month prior conversation, so that nobody's stressed. And we can make it happen and it goes smoothly. And yes, you can have your office renovated exactly how you like, you know. Instead, it just fell apart because the stress got to them. And I'm not stressed because I know how things work, but it's just when you're dealing with businesses, and this is not what they do, on top of maybe moving, some businesses, depending, it can cost $100,000 for them to move, just to move. And that doesn't include anything else. Then they have to redo all of their marketing for the new address. They're going to have to buy new neon signs to put on the building. You know, these are all the things that you have to think through for your clients. And a lot of times it's not even on their radar because they're just imagining usually this beautiful space that's twice the budget they have. Yes. And you've got to make work, you know?
Yeah. And that's the expectation setting side as well. And I think partly is the timeline. It's hard to really set because sometimes people just are like, hey, I got calls. I was able to get a deal done with this particular entity, but they called me. They're like, hey, we're getting our leases up in 3 months and we need to find a space. And they needed like 7,500 square foot of warehouse space. I'm in Bluegrass. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
We're compressing the time frame here a little bit. So luckily we were able to get it done. But you're right. I mean, that's hard to really set the expectations there if you have a hard stop. But, you know, that's why setting those expectations early on in the process is so critical to making sure that you get it done. So, all right. So what I'll go ahead and do is we'll open up to Q&A. We have quite a few people on the chat. So just go ahead and type away in the chat box on the Zoom. And then I will also check on LinkedIn. I know several of you guys are on the call. So I will make sure that we answer those questions as well. So let's
what you got?
Let's see.
If you guys personal have... or professional. I'm an open book.
Absolutely. Do you have one, I guess one thing that I wanted to ask you, is there something that you wish that I would have asked you that I didn't ask you?
Oh gosh.
That's kind of a
Well, I would say, you know, a question would be just like we were just talking about before we hopped on the call, Raphael, is with the market changing, how has our book of business changed, and how have those conversations been altered? You know, mm-hmm. I'm having a lot more clients reach out about SBA loans because it requires less money down, but the hoops to jump through for an SBA loan can be very challenging. And so setting that expectation of, yes, I have lenders that do that, but just be aware that it will be harder to get this loan and you might not qualify at all, you know, because people do their own research and they think, oh, of course I'm a shoo-in, and it doesn't work that way. And then I'm having to work a lot more off-market deals. And so reaching out to property owners when they don't want to sell, they didn't think about selling. I just called them because I have investors interested in buying, you know, stabilized assets, and how to really hold yourself highly talking to someone that didn't want to talk to you, you know. And sometimes it goes well, and sometimes, just like Raphael said earlier, anybody could be your client. Well, that flips too, you know, because I called an estate attorney a couple of weeks ago that owns an entire office building, you know, and he was like, how dare you call my business establishment during business hours when this was unsolicited? You know, this is unacceptable. And just kept going on and like, wouldn't even let me get a word in, because I'm cool cucumber when I'm cold calling, you know, I don't escalate when they escalate. If anything, I kind of giggle a little because I'm just like, okay, you know. But I was in my mind, I was like, I literally just told you that I have an investor wanting to buy your entire building, and you didn't think about the fact that I might know a lot of really wealthy people when you're an mm-hmm. estate planner, you know, and we could be buddies. Instead, you hung up on me, you know. And so now I'm never going to call you either. And so it's, you've always got to remember, you're not the bad guy. Like, we're all here to do jobs, and if anything, we can help one another. So
absolutely. And understanding that it's a small, I mean, for those of you guys who are tuning in from outside of the local area, we're actually located in Louisville, Kentucky. I feel like in Louisville, it's like you're 1 or 2 degrees of separation, you know, removed from really anyone. So, yeah. You know, that's why, you know, you try to operate at the highest standard possible, because you never know who knows who. So if you have a bad interaction with someone that does something that's not right, almost chances are that you guys are going to cross paths in the future as well. So,
right.
You know, cannot, I don't know.
Burn bridges.
You can't burn bridges. Yeah.
I'm the queen of burning bridges, but I've gotten.
Yeah. No, but the bridges that you burn are probably positive, that they should have been burned.
Yeah. All right. What questions do we have?
All right. What advice would, what do you see? So first off, Roy asks, what do you see into 2024 and beyond?
All right, Roy. Well, I mean, hard to answer. I would say, I keep getting conflicting things from really trusted people who know about what's going to happen with interest rates. And a lot is weighing. I keep hearing that they're going to stay the same. I keep hearing that they're going to finally dip next year. And those obviously have very different implications. So I think that another year in, finally, we might get some landlords that come to terms with it's not ideal to have an empty building. Because like we've been talking about, you know, the whole show is that prices are up here. Well, prices are down here. Sellers' expectations are up here. And like, we've got to meet in the middle. And ever since COVID hit, in the beginning of COVID, buyers were still buying and there was this scarcity mindset and people were just grabbing things. But now that that's not here anymore, people aren't even willing to have the conversation. You know, I turned in an offer last week that was only $200,000. I mean, it was a bigger deal, you know, but it was only $200,000 under the asking price. And the listing agent said that it was so low, the seller wouldn't even respond. And I'm like, really? Well, can you share your comps with me? Because I did comps and I don't really understand, you know? And so you have to remember too, it might not be the buyer's point or the seller's point of view that you're being told. And so you've just got to, you know, buck up and stay strong and be like, no, I can prove myself. But sorry, to go back to your question, Rory, I see office having to change. I see if building material costs could go down, I don't even think that's so much of it. I think most of it's the interest rates, because there's a lot of developers out there that have the money. But to flip an apartment or to flip an office complex into apartments or permanent Airbnbs is a huge, huge investment up front. And developers are willing to do it, but they've got to make money on the back end. And Louisville's in this awkward place where we have such a shortage on affordable housing, but we've got like 5 more luxury apartments going up right now. And those apartments don't even have great, you know, occupied rates. And so I think we're going to have to come to terms with office to apartment ratio, and developers are going to have to do something because it's only going to get worse, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's going to be a big initiative that the city is going to have to get involved in as well. And, you know, obviously depending on where you're located, I'm sure affordable housing is an issue all across the country. So, you know, that's something that I feel like, you know, regardless of municipality, that the city is likely having to contend with. But with downtown in particular, I know some of these old, like, vacant office buildings are not necessarily fully vacant, but a large chunk of them are vacant. I mean, it's probably going to require some sort of public involvement to be able to make sure that the economics of making repurposing this work, because it just, like you said, construction costs and interest rates and everything as it currently stands probably makes it very difficult for developers to really make that work. So, all right. So next up is, what advice would you give? So Desmond asks, what advice would you give your younger self first going into commercial real estate? So Desmond, hey Desmond, he's actually local as well. He's a buddy of mine as well. And he's a broker actually. So he does residential and he's done a couple commercial deals as well. So I know he's wanting to do a lot more in that space, especially on the multifamily side, right? Right, Desmond? Correct? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I would tell my younger self, sometimes there's nothing you can do to earn a reputation except have time under your belt. And that's probably been one of the hardest lessons to learn. When you're such a go-getter and you're relentless and you know, want so much for yourself, you've got to understand that there's a lot of money up there with people that you don't know that have had that money for a long time and have all their own contacts, and you can't just walk your way into their life and demand attention. And you've got to prove yourself with the smaller deals that then lead to medium deals, which then lead to decent sized deals, which then will get you the big deals. And I would say, you know, coming from the trash industry where it was kind of a level playing field and anybody could sell dumpsters, but who could do it best, you know, and kind of be the most likable person, that doesn't matter anymore, because this is such a relationship based business. You've got to earn your way up the ladder, if that makes sense. And that it's going to take time, and there's no way for you to just make it happen overnight.
Definitely. Couldn't agree more. And really, I think one of the benefits too, which I, you know, I'd share as well, is getting to know the players in the market and really understanding the people who do certain things. Like, there's certain agents that do a lot of retail. There's certain agents that do a lot of industrial. There's certain agents that do a lot of multifamily. And so, you know, what I've found extreme value in is that as I've started to get more opportunities in my business, the first people I call are the people who do a lot of retail. I'll call those three agents and be like, hey, just so you know, I got this, you know, client in the pike. If you guys have any leasing opportunities, let me know. You know, this is what they're looking for. And they'll do the same thing for me. So, you know, you start to build these symbiotic type of relationships with people. Because really, the difference is, one of the other differences between commercial and residential real estate is that you kind of run into the same people over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I mean, You know,
well, it's so funny you say that. I just saw a meme a couple of days ago, and it said the people at the top collaborate and the people at the bottom compete. And I thought that was really wonderful to read because it's true. You know, I just went to dinner last night with a great female broker that's been in it. She's only a couple years older than me, and she's been in it a decade longer than me. And so just to pick her brain, and she's spitting out vocab words, and to not have shame and ask, like, I don't know what that acronym means, you know, like, you're going to have to explain it to me. But also, Desmond, when I got into the business, I just called the top brokers in town and the top investors, because there are going to be developers that don't do sales like Raphael and I do. You know, they just have a license to buy and build their own properties. And so picking their brain about what types of properties do you look for? Why? What makes you hire the people you do? You know, even though it gets you some knowledge, you also have built a good nugget of information about yourself in their mind. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And you'll be surprised how receptive people are that are that caliber of individual, how willing they would be to sit down and just have a conversation over coffee. So, you know, I've always been shocked by just reaching out to some of these bigger developers and just saying, hey, just wanted to grab a cup of coffee. So now I can't always get on their schedule, but I've sat down with some of the bigger developers in town just through just reaching out and having a conversation. Yeah. And
that agent sold $450 million, I took him to a $12 a plate lunch. Felt kind of bad after I found that out.
Hey, but that's awesome that you made that work though. And obviously, you know, another thing I know that Krista does a lot of is getting involved in something. Like, you know, obviously you're president. Are you still in the term for president?
Yes,
for Crew?
Yes. So I'm, oh my gosh, guys, I'm president of Crew Louisville. I'm on the board of Spark Hope. I've helped three other nonprofits. And so not that nonprofits have to be your thing, but you've just got to get involved in the city and be able to meet the people who make decisions one way or the other, you know? And even if it's something you're not interested in, meeting people at those events, A, I always love learning different perspectives, whether I believe the same thing or not, but also B, it gets you in the room with people that you might not have met otherwise. And so sometimes, like for example, I went to a metal concert with my husband. And I was like, this is different. This is wow, you know? And it was so wonderful to see a room full of people so happy of a music I had never listened to, you know? And so if you take that and apply it to your business, you can learn so much about the economy and take that knowledge and then either educate your clients and pass it on, or you can do something with it and grow it if that's something that you're interested in. And so it's funny. My mother-in-law, I told her a story about an event I went to, and we caught up with another friend, and she's like, oh, tell her about the event you went to. And I was like I had just told her that story 10 minutes prior, and I glazed over and I was like, which event? I go to like 10 events a week, you know? And so you do lose track of time, but you've got to decide where you put your time is what I'm trying to say.
100%. And I couldn't agree more. And, you know, obviously getting involved in causes that you believe in, there's benefits to it, right? You get to contribute to a higher purpose because I'm of the belief that we're here for a higher reason. So being able to contribute to a cause that is beneficial is obviously great. But not only that, you get business opportunities out of it. I've gotten several very high dollar referrals from my involvement in these different boards that I'm a part of. I'm president of the Junior Achievement Young Professionals Board. You know, I'm on the CCIM board now. You know, I've been involved in leadership for different networking organizations that I've been a part of. And all those have led to deals and opportunities. And that's because of the network that I've built because of that. So that's what I would definitely share as advice. All right. So we have a question. Jesse asked, you mentioned running comps for commercial. When running the comps for a single family or multifamily, it's fairly easy for the owner to see what has sold in the area recently. So also easy to verify your asking price is solid. I don't see the same when looking for office or commercial that has recently sold.
Yeah, it's definitely harder. And I'm glad you already are aware of that, because I always tell people, if I have three comps in commercial, like, woo, we got a lot to go off of, you know? But sometimes it is very challenging. I loved pulling comps. That's something I really enjoy about what we do. And so I would say you've got to break it down by the square footage. Okay. And then if there's extra land that comes with it, comp the land separately, like cut off that sector and see how much does the land would cost. And you can add them up together and give yourself a better idea. I would say, but knowing the market and like Rafael and talked about talking to people that have already done it, because we all know on this call that something that has a corner lot and is visible from the freeway is going to be worth a heck of a ton more than something that's just a little lot zone commercial in the middle of a residential area. Okay. And so you've got to be able to gauge and look at those different comps and pull different files to say, okay, I believe this value adds this much, but also giving your client a range. Okay. Because you don't go to your client in commercial, I mean, usually, and just say 1.75 million. That's it. That's how we're going to do it. Cause this is what I can show you, you know, no, it's also based on, actually, I think it's worth between 1.6 and 1.8. It depends on the shape of the building. It depends on what the building's made out of, depends on how new the roof is. And those are things that you may or may not know or be told. And so it's more based on always what someone is willing to pay for it. And giving your client that range gives them the expectation that, oh, maybe I shouldn't list it for 1.9, you know, because we're definitely not going to get that. But I had to call an agent that's been in it for 30 years 2 days ago, because I'm about to list a warehouse that is pretty much a glorified shack, but it's the size, it's 35,000 square feet. And so it's just like, I can see the sky through the roof. How do I price something that is not a concrete manufacturing facility when those are my only comps? And so breaking it down by the square footage can really help you with that.
100%. Yeah. And I know that as agents, we pay for subscriptions to our local commercial MLS, which is called KCREA. So we have access to comps that that the general populace may have a difficulty accessing. Right. So, you know, I'm assuming if you're an agent in other parts of the country, then you can also pay probably for a subscription to that software. Well,
a lot of sales go undisclosed. So if you don't have PVA logins to actually look at what it's sold for, I don't know how you would pull comps. You'd have no idea. You can't go off of the price that they listed it for sale as.
100%.
Know?
Yeah. And that's another thing. That's a great point, is that a lot of times agents, I don't know why sometimes, especially for sales, like, I don't know why they just don't disclose it, but on the back end for some of our commercial MLS, like, a lot of times they don't disclose the final purchase price, which, you know, you could look it up anyways on the PVA, but it just creates like an additional hoop to jump through. And then lease rates are even harder to find because no one wants to tell you what they're paying in rent.
No, usually you have to call the agent and ask, and that means you better be buddies with them, or else why would they call you back? So
And that's hard to get out as people sometimes. It's I've had tough conversations like that too. So. All right. So last question, it looks like we may have time for one or two more questions. How do the investors that your brokerage works with find you? Is it during your networking, advertising, et cetera?
So I went to a brokerage that is pretty much the front company for a developer. And so specifically at my brokerage, the investors were the basis of forming the company. And then they just request what they'd like. Now, do I personally work with them? Am I their number one agent? No, you know, because I didn't form my own company. I would say that going to events is what I specialize in. I go to networking events. I go to all of them in the residential world, because again, I always encourage residential agents. If it's a small office condo, if it's multifamily, you got it. I trust you. If it's not, you need to give it to me. You know, unless you want to learn commercial, because it's going to take you a long time to figure it out. And so I go to all those events and stay seen. And then I go to, we have a social club here in town. I always go to their networking nights. You get involved in YPAL. I'm not saying join everything, because that will exhaust you and you're going to die on the hill and your calendar is going to be taken up by things that may not make you money, you know, because you're not meeting the right people. And you can meet really nice people and have fun, but if there's no one for you to follow up with and get a coffee and dive in deeper with, then that wasn't the right type of event for you to go to. And Vanessa, just to answer your question as well, I don't do any advertising. I don't spend $1 on advertising. I never have. I would rather spend money on memberships for me to go and meet people. But again, like we've been saying, you've got to find what works for you personally. I ask all of my clients to do a Google review. So I've, to my own surprise, have had clients call me off of my Google reviews, and then they looked me up on LinkedIn, and I'm shocked, you know, and I'm just like, I don't know how you found me. And they're like, no, I actually researched you, and you're young enough that you hustle and you're a female, so you fight for yourself, you know? And I was like, okay, you know, you're true. It's right. So let's give it a shot. So always call people back. That's the number one thing, and do what you say you're going to do. If you say, and that's why I underpromise and overdeliver. Like I said, if I get a new lead, like yesterday morning, I had the time to do it yesterday afternoon. I told them I would send them listings for them to review this afternoon. And I went ahead and sent it to them this morning. So, and then I always text them and say, I just sent you listings, you know, so you've just always got to stay in front of people and do what you say you're going to do. And honestly, that's helped build my reputation with or without investors, because people know people who know people. And so eventually the millionaires will call me, you know, but right now helping the medium-sized businesses in Louisville is super rewarding. And that's what I focus on.
That's awesome.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
All right.
Anything else?
I think we got all the questions answered. So first off, Krista, always a pleasure. Always good to connect. And, for those of you guys who are tuning in, yeah, I hope you gain some value from this discussion. I know I have. You know, as far as what we do on a regular basis, this happens every other week. So we invite speakers from all across the country to talk about different commercial real estate topics. So continue to come back, continue to engage, and we'd really appreciate all the support. Finally, before we hop off, Krista, if people want to learn more about what you do, potentially work with you, what's the best way to be able to do that?
Yeah. You guys can feel free to email me. My email is Krista, K-R-I-S-T-A at core, C-O-R-E, the numbers 502.com.
Awesome. Yeah. And we'll include that.
You can find me on LinkedIn, and you can friend me on Facebook. Do whatever you want. I'm here for you.
Absolutely. And we'll include all that in the show notes. So we do record these and put them on YouTube and also distribute them as a podcast format on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So if you guys are watching this or listening to this, go ahead.
You got options.
You got options. And then you just look up Krista and you find her Google reviews and you'll say, absolutely, let me give her a call. So
awesome. Well, thank you all for coming. And always feel free to reach out with questions. I hope everyone has a good day.
Absolutely. We'll see you guys next time. See you guys.
Thanks, Raphael. Okay.
Ciao.
Bye.
Bye.